Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. It's nice to be back with you today. And we're excited because we're welcoming back a gentleman who was with us a week ago in a fascinating conversation. His name is Ted Phelps, and he's the president of a firm known as FVLC, which actually stands for Forensic Valuation and Litigation Services. It's a pretty amazing company what he is doing with it. He's based in Spokane, Washington. He is a seasoned CPA and also a private investigator. But he serves as the president of this firm. He is renowned as a thought leader in his field, and he's dedicated more than 40 years to unearthing fraud and upholding financial integrity. To give you some idea, if you didn't hear that broadcast last week, his role as a forensic accountant in which he brings a wealth of expertise to investigate a wide range of financial misconduct, including such thing as fraud, embezzlement, money laundering, and a lot of other unethical or illegal transactions. And his firm extends their forensic evaluation and litigation services to clients, working really closely with their legal teams, from securities fraud and insurance claims to motor vehicle accidents and bribery. The landscape of financial deception is, as you can imagine, broad and ever-changing. And it's in this area, the need for adept forensic accountants is more pressing than ever, and he is one of the best in the business. Without, you know, going into a lot more description of what he does, we're going to talk to him and let him tell us. That's the best way to learn, but it's a very big pleasure for me to welcome Ted Phelps to our microphones. Ted, thank you. Welcome back. Nice to have you with us. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks, Doug, and it's nice to be here with you.
Well, you know, there's one question I have that a lot of people may not understand, and you're the one who can certainly fill us in on it. What actually is the correct description of a forensic accountant? How do you describe that?
Well, a good friend of mine, Daryl Durrell, has written the book on forensic accounting, and he defines it as the art and science of investigating people and money. And I think that pretty much encompasses the subject pretty well.
So money is that really at the core of, in the end, of what gets you involved. I know you deal with such things as a spouse who may be playing a game of hide and seek with some her husband's finances. Maybe someone's overwhelmed by the complex task of equitable property division in a divorce. Partners in a business could be finagling with money, trying to cheat their other partner out of it. There are all kinds of things of this nature that you get involved in which your sharp investigative skills and experience and in-depth knowledge are so valuable. Let me ask you, Elaine, you know, it's interesting because I know you are kind of you're actually a detective. How did you begin life as a detective and then got into this? How did that happen? Explain it.
No, I actually became licensed after I started getting into the fraud investigation because in California, certain things are limited only to private investigators. And that's, for example, if you go out and talk to somebody about another person's reputation or their honesty, that's kind of the sole province of private investigators. And so I didn't want to step on their toes, so I had relevant experience and was able to get licensed as a private investigator.
And in the role of a private investigator, you didn't, I assume, you were, you know, your legal duties were more important than going out to investigate a murder case or something like that. Am I right? That's why you became
right.
A private investigator. Right. Okay.
Correct. An awful lot of an awful lot of what they do, like surveillance and that type of thing. I would subcontract that out. We were doing primarily accounting, but if we needed somebody followed or surveilled, we would hire subcontractors who are specialists at doing that.
Well, you know, that's very interesting. Just give me an as a good example of what you do. Describe a case for me where you would actually resort to having someone followed. What would a case like that be like? What would it involve?
Well, we were doing a mortgage fraud case back in the early 2000s, and this case involved a lot of identity theft. In other words, these people were going in and flipping these houses over and over again, and every time they do it, it'd be for increased value, and they got appraisals, but they had stolen the identities of reputable appraisers. And it turned out that in the case, there are only two actual human beings in the case, and we followed one to find out where the other one was. And so we had somebody following them in a car and calling information back to us, and we were able to track this person to the house of the other person. There were only two people. There was a real estate broker and a notary public, and those people had this several $100 million worth of worthless and phony mortgages that they had put together.
Wow. Big case. A lot of money. Interesting.
How
important does your role as a private investigator, when you got credited for that, how important is that now in what you do, where obviously I would assume most of your work is sitting behind a desk doing investigation work, I guess on the phone more than anything else, because I don't see you out following people up and down the street, right?
No. Most of what the private investigator's license does is it gives me access to data and to other people who can assist me in my work. So if I, for example, want to trace a person's assets and find out what he has and what he might be hiding, I may... And let's say he's in Massachusetts and I'm in Washington. I may call a private investigator in Massachusetts and ask him to look into this person and drive by his house and see what kind of cars he's driving, that type of thing.
But, I mean, I could do that as well. I wouldn't have to be a private investigator to hire a private investigator in another town, right? Or would I be wrong on that?
No, in order to use that information and be able to testify to it in court, you should be licensed, yes.
I see. That's where it comes into play. That's very interesting. I'm interested to know if when you began your career, did you think this was what you were headed for, your primary goal, to do this kind of legal services?
Absolutely not. I started out at the United States Naval Academy with the idea of a career in the Navy. And after I'd spent a couple of years there, I realized that's not really what I wanted to do, so I left. And I finished my bachelor's degree in accounting, and I was working in corporate accounting. As a matter of fact, at one time I was the controller at Forest Lawn Memorial Parks in Southern California.
Oh, yeah. You
probably remember them.
Absolutely.
I went from there to another company, and I had gotten interested in turnaround consulting. We're going into financially distressed companies and taking the steps necessary to get them straightened out. And that's what I did for a number of years after I went out on my own and started a consulting firm in 1985. I was doing mostly turnaround and workout accounting. And then in 1989, I sold that firm to Price Waterhouse, and I went to work for them. And I was, while I was hired as their director of corporate reorganization, but while I was there, I was in with a bunch of really bright people that were doing forensic accounting and business valuation and litigation support. And so I kind of learned those skills. And so 3 years later, when I went back out on my own, I added those skills to the palette of things that I was doing.
Yeah.
And started testifying in cases as either an expert or a fact witness. And I started doing court-appointed neutral work or fiduciary, where I was appointed as a receiver to go in and take over struggling companies and try to get them straightened out as an officer of the court. And so around 2000, all of that kind of came together into the practice that I have now.
Well, you know, your background is so amazing and so varied, but the company you've founded now is really involved in so many forensic areas, fraud examination, corporate investigation, and that could mean almost anything, shareholder and partner disputes, the reconstruction of accounting records. It's amazing. Investigation of bankruptcy crimes. It's an amazing and I would think a fascinating aspect of the legal side of business. I would assume you really love what you do. It's interesting, isn't it? For sure.
I do. I never get bored. And I think if I were doing the same thing every day, day in and day out, I would get bored. But there's always something new. And there's people are incredibly creative, and the crooks are very creative. Every time we come up with some way to stop them, they come up with some new way to get around it. So it's like a never-ending chess game.
What kind of situations and crimes, I guess, do you find the most compelling to be involved with? I mean, you know, it could be a partner dispute in a business. It could be a husband and wife having a dispute. It's almost endless the kind of situations could be. What do you find the most challenging? I'd love to know an example of one of the cases that you found really, really compelling.
Well, lately I've been focusing on two areas that are very similar in many ways, and that is marital dissolution and partnership dissolution or shareholder dissolutions, where partners are breaking up and marital partners are breaking up, and there are a lot of similarities. There are feelings of betrayal. There's a feeling of they rationalize the idea that they're not going to let the other person get away with taking what they've built up over so many years. And so you could have a doctor or a dentist who's built this practice, and she is splitting up with her husband, and her husband, she doesn't want her husband to take 50% of what she's built up over the years. So she may feel entirely justified in hiding cash flow to bring down the value of the practice, even though he is entitled in most states to half that practice if it was built during the marriage. So,
right.
You know, I can work for both sides. I come up with a fair value, either regardless of for whom I'm working, but I've many times run into areas where People have spirited thousands and in one case tens of millions of dollars into phony or shell corporations just to decrease the cash flow of the company that I'm valuing.
So tell me a little bit about what it involves for you to do, you know, figure out. And when you get involved in a case like this, where it's two business partners are splitting up or a husband and wife are splitting up, there's a lot of work on your part that goes into that. Give us an idea of what it involves from
okay.
your side.
We had a life settlements company. A life settlements company are these people that go out and buy life insurance policies from people who may be ill or not in the best of health, and they pay them an amount of money, so they've got money in their hand, and they take over the policy and service it until that person dies. So my client was one of three people that founded this company, but he had become ill. He'd been injured, and he got into a situation where he was hooked on prescription meds for a while. And so the other two partners decided they were going to squeeze him out. They determined they could do just as well without him. So
yeah.
They went out and got a valuation from a very large international CPA firm, but they only gave that firm what they wanted them to see, and they valued my client's interest at $35,000. We got into it, and we discovered literally tens of millions of dollars had been paid out to vendors that had not existed at the time that my client was involved in the company. So we started investigating the ownership of these companies, and it turned out that those two partners owned or controlled these shell companies, and that all this money was being paid out to these companies. Well, the value of a company is a function of its cash flow and a risk rate that we develop. And so they decreased the cash flow, so they tremendously decreased the value of the company. I valued my client's interest at about $14 million, not $35,000.
Yeah.
And when it went to court and the jury verdict came in, the verdict for my client was $21 million. So
wow.
It was a huge swing. It's probably the
wow.
one of the most interesting cases I've ever worked.
$35,000 to $21 million. But on your part, that's meant hours and hours and hours of going through records, I assume. Would that be right?
Correct.
Yes.
That's what it takes to be a forensic accountant and a forensic examiner, as you are. It's pretty. I'm so amazed at what you do. And why? Let me ask you, why do you think fraud is so much on the rise? It seems to be on the rise. Is that a fair statement to make?
Yes, it is. And I think it's indicative of a kind of a moral decay going on in the country. I grew up in the 1950s, and everybody I knew went to church on Sunday. And
Yeah. They
had a sense of allegiance to a higher authority. And that doesn't exist anymore. And we've had, in the culture, we've had TV programs like Dallas that made cheating your partner or even cheating on your wife kind of cute. And everybody just loved JR and tuned in to see what he would do next week. And I think, this is a kind of a moral decay that we're going through. And then the advent of technology has made it so much easier to commit fraud, forgery, and with things like Photoshop, where you can actually change the character of a document, and it's almost undetectable at this point. So I think the advent of technology and just the general moral decline has probably contributed an awful lot to this thing, and it certainly keeps me busy.
I can see that. Are you kind of rare in the legal field, or are there, you know, are there a lot of firms nationwide who do this kind of thing? I know you're, you know, you're highly specialized, highly regarded. You're in Spokane, but you know, are there a lot of you guys kind of out there?
Yeah, all of the large accounting firms and even the medium-sized ones have forensic departments.
Yeah,
I don't think as many of them have private investigators on staff. I know that Price Waterhouse had some for a while, but I think the combination of the things that, of our skill sets and the kind of cases we do, if not unique, is highly specialized.
And are the clients that come to you? Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
It's a lot different than the auditing, you know, the financial statement auditing that CPA firms do. They use a lot of sampling techniques, whereas what forensic accountants do, we look at everything. We try to separate the fly specks. We don't do sampling. We look at everything.
That's a great way to put it. Wow. So you really go to the nth degree. Do you work primarily for individuals, or are you called in to work for, you know, big corporations and companies? How would you answer that?
We work for lawyers. We work for lawyers for a number of reasons. First off, because we want to maintain the attorney-client privilege on our work up until the time that if I'm going to testify as an expert, then the privilege is gone. But up until that time, until I'm designated an expert, just in case I find out something that's going to hurt the case of the person that the attorney I'm working for is representing, then he would probably not have me testify. But also because the attorneys have subpoena power and can go out and get the records that I need. And so I work very closely with attorneys in the various cases we get into.
And so the cases could involve big companies as well, but you're working for the law firm that represents the companies then, right? That's how you
correct.
Get involved.
Or that's correct. Or sometimes I'll work for a federal receiver on a Ponzi scheme matter. So we're working for a receiver that's appointed by the SEC to investigate these firms. Again, we still work for that receiver, and we maintain the privilege up until if and when I testify as an expert.
Well, there's so many things. I was just thinking, I know you do a lot of divorce litigation. You do valuation services like estate and gift. Where would your services become involved in that area, estate and gift valuation services? Why would your services be required there? Explain.
Okay. A lot of times people want to make gifts before they die to their children or to their grandchildren. And those gifts may be of a partial interest in a piece of real estate or a company or a business. And those have to be valued so that they can be reported on the gift tax return. And so they'll hire me to come in and put a value on a business, for example, where they're giving 33% of a business to each of three grandchildren, for example.
Right.
And they
right.
need to know what the value of that is, because the value of the business might be $100 million, but a third of that business is worth less than a third of the total business, because it has If it's a 33% share, it's not going to be worth $33 million because it has its ownership rights are impaired by the fact that they're not a majority owner, and that a one-third share is less marketable than a 100% share. So we have to go in and make those determinations.
I can understand that. It makes sense. As I pointed out, you're based in Spokane. By the way, you have a really thorough website. Let me give the website address to anybody who might be interested in getting in touch with our guest, Ted Phelps. It's FVLSC. FVLSC stands for Forensic Valuation and Litigation Services Consulting. Plenty of information there. It's pretty amazing. I was going to ask you about all these cases that you're involved in. How long are you involved in a situation in one of these cases? They go on for a lengthy period of time, I would imagine.
They can. I had a receivership back in 2013 that didn't conclude until 2016. I think it was about 33 months. But in that case, we had to go back 20 years and redo the bookkeeping on 14 different entities because one of the people in this partnership had played around with the books so badly that we had to basically start all over again. And that was a very involved case, involved two people who never married, but it was a man and a woman. And during that time, they had accumulated a real estate fortune in the tens of millions of dollars. And then one of them decided to get out of the relationship, and the other then accused that person of fraud and embezzlement and various other things. And it turned out that the person making the accusation had actually taken more money out of the business than the other person. But it took us, almost 3 years to find all this out.
You know, I can imagine what you do is really, you're going through records after records and just scrutinize everything. As you say, you're looking for, the spy flex. By the way, do you work for firms outside of the area of Washington, the state of Washington?
Yes, we have a nationwide practice, and with the technology that's available, we can transmit 50 or 100,000 documents at the speed of light, really, because of the technology as well as it is. So we don't have to be in any one place to be able to do one of these.
Well, I find it amazing at what you do, Ted, and I'm so happy that you were willing to take the time out to talk to us a little bit about the kind of work you do and the kind of cases you get involved in. It just shows you there's fraud and crime in almost every aspect of the business life as well as personal life. Our guest has been Ted Phelps. He's the president of FVLS Consulting. FVLS Consulting. And again, the website again is FVLS.com. FVLSC.com. Got it right. FVLSC.com. Ted, thank you for talking with us. Amazing story that you have, and we really enjoyed chatting with you. Okay? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Doug. I enjoyed it as well.
Thank you very much, sir. That's it, everybody. I hope you learned something from this, an amazing story of a real detective. No question about it.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We sure do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time, everybody. Until then, please take care. Bye for now.